on the street talking about the protest that's going on downtown every Saturday in front of Bunny Shoes, urging the Downtown Association and the businesses there to stop harassing homeless people or supporting the city's official no sleep for the homeless at night policies, which have been in effect for many years but have recently gotten worse. Anyway, stay tuned and you will hear more.
I got news of the very best kind of our troubles that have fallen behind about people that used to be blind till they open up their eyes to see. It's news when they begin to ask why they're poor until the day that they die they're tired of pie in the sky and they want some security. And that's news, news, ain't that news? Ain't that something to see? That's news, news, you talk about your news, that's mighty good news to me.
I got news about some ordinary men, they heard it preach time and again to be patient and grateful, amen, and don't agitate around here. They argued and they talked it around and they woke up, and here's what they found, their voices made a mighty big sound till they didn't know the meaning of fear.
And that's news, news, ain't that news? Ain't that something to see? News, news, you talk about your news, that's mighty good news to me.
In the hazard, they're meeting at night organizing and doing it right and planning for a hell of a fight, and they sure don't aim to lose. In New York, the tenants that know the slumlord ain't getting our dough, they're fed up. And I want you to know that's the very best kind of news.
And that's news, news, ain't that news? Ain't that something to see? News, news, you talk about some news, that's mighty good news to me.
And that's news, news, ain't that news? Ain't that something to see?
That's news, news, you talk about some news, that's mighty good news to me.
You gotta stand and shout when you know it's right.
Let me tell you about the times I've had. Ain't so good and ain't so bad. Let me tell you about the times I've had. Traveling up the road to Gilead. Let me tell you about the places I've been. Let me tell you about the folly of men. Oh, 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 the times I've had.
Lots of people talk about a coming war. Some of them rich, some of them poor. They talk about it like a blackjack game, but win or lose, you can't play a game.
Let me tell you about the times I've had. Ain't so good and it ain't so bad. Let me tell you about the times I've had. Traveling up the road to Gilead. Let me tell you about the places I've been. Let me tell you about the body of men. Oh, 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 the times I've had.
I was in Ohio in a little truck stop. Soldier told me this peace has got to stop. Think about the economy. I ain't afraid to fight for my country.
Now let me tell you about the times I've had. Ain't so good and ain't so bad. Let me tell you about the times I've had. Traveling up the road to Gilead. Let me tell you about the places I've been. Let me tell you about the body of men. Oh, 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 the times I've had.
It's folks that want to fight I'm a-talking about, leading the blind in a timeless drought. I don't want no drought in my land when there's peace and love in my right hand.
Let me tell you about the times I've had. Ain't so good and ain't so bad. Let me tell you about the times I've had. Traveling up the road to Gilead. Let me tell you about the places I've been. Let me tell you about the folly of men. Oh, 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 the times I've had. Let me tell you about the times I've had. Ain't so good and ain't so bad.
Well, well, well.
Let me tell you about the times I've had. Traveling up the road to Gilead. Let me tell you about the places I've been.
Well, well, well.
Let me tell you about the folly of men. Oh, 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 the times I've had.
Oh, daughter, dear daughter, take a warning from me, and don't you go marching with the young C&E. For they'll rock you and roll you and shove you into bed, and if they steal your nuclear secrets, you'll wish you were dead, singing toorally, oorally, oorally, eh. Oh, mother, dear mother, I am not afraid, for I'll go on that march and I'll return a maid. With a brick in my handbag and a scowl on my face, and barbed wire in my underwear to head off disgrace, singing toorally, hoorally, oorally, but as they were marching, a young man came by, with a beard on his chin and a gleam in his eye. And before she had time to remember her brick, they were holding a sit-down on a neighbouring hayrick, singing toorally, oorally, oorally, now once at the briefing she heard a man say, go perfectly limp and be carried away. So when this chap suggested it was time she was kissed, she remembered her briefing and did not resist, singing toorally, hoorally, oorally, eh. Oh, meeting is pleasure and parting is pain, I don't need to sing all that folk stuff again. Oh, mother, dear mother, I'm stiff and I'm sore from sleeping 3 nights on a hard classroom floor, singing toorally, hoorally, hoorally, eh. Now, mother, don't flap, there's no need for distress, that marcher has left me his name and address. And if we win, though a baby there be, he won't have to march like his dada and me, singing toorally, oorally, oorally, eh.
And that was three folk songs from the Broadside Collection. One was called Ain't That News by Tom Paxton. Another was called The Times I've Had, a Phil Oakes song, which had backup from Pete Seeger on banjo. And the last one, the Scott-sounding song, was Matt McGinn's Go Limp, advice on how to deal with protests. He was with the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament way back in the 1950s, and it refers to the civil disobedience technique of letting your body go limp while being arrested. So you don't lend assistance to the arresting officers, but you also create no resistance. Though I think, I'm not sure if they'll be charging you with resisting arrest or not if you do that here in California and in Santa Cruz County with protests. I don't know if there have been successful convictions for resisting arrest for people who've gone limp, but they would tend to use pain compliance holds that will make you move along. It's kind of a form of street torture in order to get you to do what they want. Well, welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz. The name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and you are tuned to 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, if you're listening to me on the net. And I'm in the studio here, somewhat struggling with equipment because I can't hear any speakers in the studio. Somebody who was in a previous program turned them all off, and I'm so ignorant of how to deal with the situation that I don't know how to turn them on. But I'm hoping, and it looks like from the equipment's levels, that we are broadcasting out to you. And the phone lines are open. 427-3772 is the call-in number. Should be receiving a call soon in about 15 minutes from Ed Davidson. He's a local city council watcher who has been on the scene keeping an eye on some of the more, well, what some of us may find arcane and obscure issues like the Seaside Company's Tidelands grab, where the Seaside Company built a parking lot over land that many of us feel belongs to the community. The La Bahia project there, which is, again, proceeding with non-union labor and ignoring environmental concerns in order to fatten the pockets of developers and speed along development processes for some who are eager to see that happen in the city. And then we're going to be talking about that and other topics as well when Ed calls in. At 7 o'clock, we're going to have a special couple of guests from the Measure K Committee. The Measure K Committee is a committee of the Santa Cruz City Council, which was created by the voters to make sure that marijuana enforcement in the city is the lowest priority, that the police don't run around busting you, even though they have a tendency to do that, because marijuana is really a harmless herb that should have been decriminalized decades ago, and essentially it fattens the coffers of pharmaceutical industries, police agencies, and other rip-off artists like drug testing companies to continue its criminalization. And the majority of the Santa Cruz community, I'm sure, does not want that to be happening. But unfortunately, police lobbies and other conservative groups have kept marijuana a class A drug federally, and it's also, of course, a criminal on the state basis unless you use it medically. But the Measure K Committee is an interesting group that the voters tried to set up to say, look, if the police should not be going after people in private over 21 who are using, selling, cultivating, growing, or transporting marijuana, unless they have absolutely nothing else to do. They're calling it the lowest priority. And we're finding out that the police are circumventing this, ignoring this, and that the committee that's supposed to be overseeing it is rubber stamping at least 123 marijuana-related arrests that may or may not be Measure K compliant. We don't know because they don't show the records to this committee that's supposed to be overseeing them. And we're going to be talking with two of those committee members at 7 o'clock. In the studio with me, though, waiting patiently, perhaps a bit nervously, is my first guest. His name is George Rimbaugh. Rimbaugh. I'm going to get it right, George. George kind of ran into me at a Huff meeting. Huff meets every Wednesday at 9:30 in the morning at the Sub Rosa Cafe at Pacific and Sycamore? I'm not sure.
Sycamore is the other street.
It's not Sycamore. No. It's one of those tree streets, and it's a block from Laurel Street and near the Saturn Cafe. Many folks who listen to this know where the Sub Rosa Cafe is, and if you don't, you should check it out. It's a very comfortable place to be. You don't have to spend money to be there. Coffee's only $1 if you want to buy it, and if you come to Huff meetings, coffee is free. We provide our own mixture of chemicals, which we call coffee or cappuccino. And, George, you kind of wandered up to check us out because you're a longtime Santa Cruz, and I know as we came to the studio at our secret location, you mentioned you'd been around for, gosh, since the 50s at least.
Yeah, I guess it's been I got here when I was 6 months old, and it's probably in 51 or 2.
Come a little closer to the mic there. There you go.
Yeah, it's probably about since 52, 53.
Yeah, and you've been doing, what kind of work do you do in Santa Cruz?
I'm actually a carpenter.
Uh-huh.
I haven't worked in the last 2 years. If it wasn't for unemployment extension, I'd already be homeless myself.
I know a lot. Well, there's virtually no carpentry going on these days at the moment as far in Santa Cruz. I was reading the paper yesterday, or was it today? Sentinel had a long story about how construction jobs are down the shitter, so to speak.
Yeah, being a carpenter, you know, you spoke a little while ago about not having union work at the Baha'i, which I definitely have my opinion on that. But that's, I guess.
Now, tell me about that. What
well, you, I, you know, I think we should keep the money in town, and it being and Santa Cruz, as far as carpenters concerned, isn't a very big union town. And I venture to say that majority of the union workers would be coming from over the hill, which in turn takes the money back over the hill.
That's an interesting point.
If you can say have some sort of speculation saying 40% of the employees have to be Santa Cruzans would be a better option as far as I'm concerned. Huh. Again, I would venture to say 75% of the carpenters in Santa Cruz aren't union workers. So that's what I think about that.
Right. Is that, do you think, because they've chosen not to join unions or because what's the reason? Because unions have traditionally, they're corrupt unions. And the unions that, a lot of their do-nothing unions, and unfortunately a lot of the unions are like that, but they have helped raise the pay scales, right?
The pay is great. The pay is great. I actually was in the union back when I was 21 years old. And I actually stayed in for maybe a year or so and only got a couple of months worth of work. And I found that the same group of carpenters were all getting the lengthy jobs, and I would get all the short jobs, 2 or 3 day jobs, and then you go back on a list of 300 people. And
so it's a form of favoritism in the
exactly.
Union. What was the union you were a member of?
Oh gosh, that was
long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that's still the case. I mean, I tend to be a knee-jerk union supporter, but I think criticisms of the union are an important thing if you're going to make sure that abuses are dealt with, and maybe in fundamental changes need to be made.
I just don't believe it's going to help Santa Cruz as far as keeping the money in town. We need to keep the money in town. Like I said, the majority, if it was to go union, the majority of the workers would be coming from San Jose.
Well, you could make a requirement that it be both A, union, and B,
Santa Cruz.
They would have to be Santa
yeah.
Cruz
well,
unions.
Yeah.
You could do that.
Yeah. If that was to happen, I'd go out and get in the union right now.
There you go. That should be. But, of course, our city council doesn't make any such requirements, and therefore, mm-hmm. essentially, it hands jobs over to Swenson and other big developers who, you know, then develop it as they want. At least mm-hmm. that's the concern of a number of folks who have raised these issues. You originally approached me, though, on a matter really of much more urgency for you, having to do with your tenancy. You're an individual who's been paying your rent regularly?
For the last 6 years, I've been in the same location.
And how much? What has your rent been?
It started out at $985, and it went up to $1,000 2 years ago. It's really good rent. It's I really love my home, and I know it's good rent.
Kind of an apartment? I mean, what? How,
It's an older house similar to this one.
Is it one bedroom?
No, it's a two bedroom. I call it a flat because it's not necessarily in an apartment house. It's one large house cut into four different apartments, two bedrooms and 2 1 bedrooms. And
you've lived there for how long?
6 years.
And the same company has run the place?
No, that's where I sort of got into a dilemma. It got sold about 3 years ago to this one company. I won't give the name right yet.
Can if you want.
But Elan is the name of it's out of San Jose or Los Gatos.
Let's take this call, then we'll continue. Hi, you're on Free Radio with George and Robert.
Yeah, this is Ed Davidson.
Hey, Ed. Welcome. Have you been listening to the show?
No, I haven't.
Have you got a radio?
Well, I don't have it FM handy at the moment.
So. Bummer. George, can you hang with us briefly
sure.
while we take this? Ed, we've been talking about we've got a... A guy in the studio is a longtime worker in Santa Cruz resident, is about to be evicted, and that's one of the reasons he's coming to the studio to talk about it.
Sure.
But I know you've got some other issues that I asked you to talk about, so maybe we can interrupt this by talking briefly on those issues. One of them, of course, is the Seaside, the final deal with the Seaside Company, which for 10 years at least, various groups in the community, and I guess you've been supportive of this, have been fighting to make sure that the community retains control or gets returns control of the tidelands from the private Seaside Beach Boardwalk Canfield Company to the community, and we start getting some of the moolah, which apparently we need for the budget, if nothing else, that his company has been raking in since 1933.
Well, the 33 deal was a quitclaim deed in favor of the Seaside Company, where the grantor, the giver, said, I'm conceding all my interest in this property to the middle of the river, whether I own it or not. And I'm giving up my rights to the property.
The city gave up all its rights.
Well, the city was not the grantor. The city claimed that they had an interest in it. And
who gave up their rights? To
I don't remember. It was a private party.
I see. So a private party, but there was a decision sometime later that the state and the community essentially owns everything up to the mean high water mark of where the tide comes in, right?
Right. And now it's a river, so it would be the high water of the of the bank, if you will.
And that covers that whole parking lot that's along the river that the Seaside Company has been cashing in on for decades.
Well,
right?
That's arguable. Part of the reason is the original 1850s survey was before they built the railroad trestle. And that big abutment of the railroad trestle has altered the essentially the channel, and it's allowed sand to back up to a point.
You don't really agree then with the city council and the buyers council back in 1998 that said that essentially stopped the deal, that essentially was to I guess do what's being done now largely, although with somewhat less compensation for the city, or somewhat more compensation for the city at that time. There was a lawsuit that was filed, I guess, motivated in part by work by Phil Baer, a local resident and activist, saying that the community had the rights to that tide land and should take it back from the Seaside Company, and the city's been fighting that for the last 10 years, right?
Yes, that's kind of the thrust of it. And I try to get them to refer to a survey of the state claim in tidelands that was done 27 to 29 average, and it's called the blue line, and that's the official mean high tide line of the state of California up and down from Mexico to
Ed,
Oregon.
You always have your own specifics that you bring into these issues, I think, which are very interesting. Well, I don't find them very interesting, but I think they're probably very relevant.
Well, the only thing that's relevant about it is that in this lawsuit, recent lawsuit, the state did not assert its claim to the land to the tidelands.
Why? Why not?
Because they said, we're going along with the city's claim to the tidelands, which the judge rejected.
This is Judge Burdick?
Yes.
Why did the judge reject it?
Because that line was in part of the 33 settlement, the court settlement. The state also did not assert its claim to the tidelands.
Wait a minute. So because it didn't assert it then, it can't assert it now?
Well, that's what I try to argue with the representative of the attorney general. And they said, well, we're just not going to appeal the decision.
Well, but you feel there is an appealable basis for saying that even though the city didn't, in 1933, which the city was pretty closely tied, wasn't the mayor involved with the Seaside Company and so forth in 1933?
I'm not sure about all
that. There were a lot of entanglements.
Those details. And
corruption and, back scratching and all that kind of stuff.
And surveys that were done and,
These are, of course, relevant facts, which I wish I had at my fingertips when I'm discussing it, because the reason I bring it up is the city council put the final nails in the coffin on this issue, I guess, last Tuesday at city council. And do you have any quick comment on that?
Well, the city decided not to appeal. If they had appealed, according to my concessions, my calculations, they would have gotten a lens of land that runs parallel to 3rd Street, and
they would have gotten some land, in other words, if
right,
they had appealed.
And where the levee is. The levee is now sort of
the
dividing line. Because it would have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they might not have gotten it. If the state wasn't going to cooperate, they were kind of out on a limb.
They don't mind kicking down hundreds of thousands of dollars to the visitors convention for the PR group, where much of the money goes to the Seaside Company, but they don't want to defend the interests of the community and possibly get back land from the Seaside Company that's currently being used for private profit.
Well, the only thing they could get out of it would be a portion of the parking fees. That would be their reward.
Right. Well, how much would that be per year?
Oh, I would. Well, I would say it's probably 10-15% of the parking lot.
And how much would that be?
It could be $100,000.
So they would make back the money they spent on the lawsuit within a couple years.
Right.
Right. If they won.
Right.
I know that they sold out the De Anza people's rent control and the Clearview Court people's rent control under the same argument that it was too expensive to appeal. What do you think of that?
Well, it probably is expensive to appeal.
So you support that decision?
In the case of De Anza, they had already spent a hell of a lot of money, and I supported the city in their, challenges to the new owner, fees, and they did all that they could, I think, under the to challenge it in court. And when
they didn't. The MHC, the major corporation, had lost every single lawsuit except the last one. I mean, it would have cost more, but. People were so concerned about that the DNs of people got together the individual signatures. The first time I've ever seen it happen in Santa Cruz for a referendum overturning the city council's decision to destroy rent control there. And then, of course, at the last minute, the bosses at the DNs gave up on this issue and I think sold out their membership. But I guess that's my view. I mean, you certainly have a right to your view, whatever it is.
Yeah, I only dissent in one way, and that the DNs of mobile homes themselves and the rights are in there are in the, well into the six figures for each individual coach and
the minute it changes hands, all rent control disappears, and the same is true with Clearview Court.
Oh, that's true, but the point is that
there is no rent control there anymore.
These people have so much equity that they've earned.
The equity disappears once they die or they try to sell their property.
No. They can sell their property for whoever the market will get.
And right, but who's going to buy it if there's no rent control? Come on. I mean, let me ask you this. I don't know. Have you checked out what kind of properties have changed hands in the last decade at De Anza? I haven't, so I don't know.
I don't know either.
We should check on that at some point.
But, I mean, these people are making out beautifully. They don't need... The difference in rent control from the controlled and non-controlled value of those lots.
We disagree on this, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine. Let's agree on this. There were two other subjects I was asking you about. Let's turn to those quickly. I guess one is La Bahia. We may disagree on this one, too. Maybe not. La Bahia, of course, is an old historic building down by the waterfront that was earthquake damaged, or it was looking pretty seedy, and it was beach flats. Of course, there's been a general push by what I call the Rotkin Kennedy Matthews faction of the city council. Kennedy's not on the council anymore, but Rotkin and Matthews are, to develop the area, tear it all down and build it up again, and that sort of thing. And that, of course, was overturned 10 years ago by a new city council elected by to stop the Third Street Alignment Beach South of Laurel plan, which was some of us thought another one of those Canfield schemes to redevelop stuff around his property, make it more valuable, and destroy a lot of low income housing. You're a kind of a housing, not just buffer, but you're a man who's been, deeply concerned with the issue of affordable housing. In fact, that was the reason I called you, because the county finally is now in compliance in part with a housing element for the state after decades of being out of compliance and so not getting state funding.
Right. Well, I'm
skipping over to from La Bahia to that because
let me first hit La Bahia. I can do it quickly.
Go for it.
I object to the changing the height limits allowed in the entire beach area south of Laurel.
The point that, for those who don't know, is they want the was it Swenson who's building this thing?
Right.
He wants to have a higher height limits so that, and that those people who live there think that it interferes with their view, that it's kind of unsightly. I don't know. I guess they're not claiming it's unsafe, right?
Well, the issue is a seven-story building where three stories is the maximum.
I thought they want a five-story building.
Well, it's five stories over the tallest part. It's kind of on a hillside.
Right.
But it's seven. When you stand on the sidewalk, across the street, which is called the Beach Promenade.
Right.
It's a scenic area that we've established.
Right. So it's actually seven.
You're looking at a seven-story building. That's what's in front of you.
Yeah, but isn't this great for our modern society? We need these tall skyscrapers in Santa Cruz, don't we?
Right. But the point is that nobody else has it. In the whole beach area.
It'll be all the rage. Everybody will want a skyscraper.
Well, they don't get it. Only this one property gets it. And it's a special zoning ordinance for them.
Well, don't you think that Barry deserves that after all his good work, Barry
Swenson.
All throughout town? I mean,
sure.
Wasn't he the fellow that helped tear down the Cooper House?
Right. And in doing it, of course, they're tearing down 44 moderate income apartments.
Are they replacing them?
No.
Well, they I know with the Dolphin Lee project, I guess now called the Nueva Vista, they destroyed the Dolphin, the Lee, and I guess the motel across the street, and they put in a smaller number of units, though admittedly somewhat better units. Instead of building on vacant property and creating more housing, they chose instead to destroy existing housing. Seems like they got a kind of the city has kind of a passion for doing that.
Well, we won't get into that at the moment, but La Bahia involves destroying a historic building, and the Historic Preservation Commission opposes this project as well.
Does that make any difference? Is it going to be stopped? Where is this project in
terms
of... It's
going to go to the Coastal Commission, and I hope that my arguments with the Coastal Commission will prove that it is incompatible with the its neighbors, and it's out of scale with the rest of the community and the...
But your argument is going to be based on, you know, that middle-class, well-to-do people who live there don't like its look, don't want to lose the historical quality, and don't like the height. It's not going to be that you're losing low-income housing.
That's true, but their argument that they put forward is that it's going to revitalize the whole beach area, and it's going to be a big boon for sales taxes and transit and produce jobs, etc. But they ignore the fact that the Courtyard Marriott was just approved this year.
That's another hotel nearby.
Another hotel on Riverside,
right,
replacing the Peter Pan and some of the other little ones. And it's a bigger hotel. It's 150 rooms versus 116.
It
will produce the jobs. It will produce the conferences. It'll produce all the things that the La Bahia would. And it did it within the building height limits. It did it within the rules that apply to all the properties in the beach area.
Yeah, we want to be nice to Barry, don't we? Isn't this Be Nice to Barry week?
Well, you think if you will. I will take the other side of that facetious argument.
Well, of course, I'm being a little sarcastic here.
Oh, just a little.
Did you notice that?
Just a little.
Yes.
And they're trying to skirt the Mellow Act, which requires replacement of demolition.
Are they going to be successful? Because that's really the issue for people like what you see
on
the show.
Well, there's nobody...
The right to have affordable housing there.
There's nobody to challenge it except an individual like myself who has no stake in the project, unless the grand jury, the district attorney or the grand jury can challenge the Mellow Act.
What about people who live there or who lived there?
Well, they've got it now as... student housing with the parents as, you know, guarantors of payment of rent.
So somebody has to go around and organize the students to say, what the hell's going on here?
Well, the students have a limited lease. You know, they're there for a semester or two semesters.
But could they presumably still challenge it?
No, because their lease expires at the end of the school
year.
So
there's no way to challenge it on the really substantial grounds of the destruction of affordable housing. I mean, we have a guy in the studio here who's losing his housing because it looks like a landlord wants to hike up the rents by 50%.
Okay.
So, you know, one of the reasons the landlord can get away with this kind of shit is because there isn't enough housing that's competitive for him. You can just go right ahead and, you know, charge what the market will bear, which is everybody's desperate, particularly students,
right,
for housing in this area.
In the absence of rent control, which hasn't been voted on
since 1982,
right, and there is no legal challenge to a landlord doing that. That's the real...
Right. My point is, though, that for us the issue is you know, just as it is for you, you often bring up this issue with city council at different points when different things are brought up. You say, "Where's the affordable housing? You know, what's going on with that?"
Right, and the State Department of Housing Community Development, which rules on the adequacy of housing elements and all the requirements that they're supposed to have in there, they have fallen down on the job. They have approved both the cities and the counties' housing elements, which are painfully defective.
So now let's move to this, the Board of Supervisors, which recently apparently, finally set aside some supposedly, and by affordable, we don't really mean affordable for people who really are low income, but affordable in the most technical sense. I don't know if you make $80,000 a year or less, or something like that, $60,000 a year or less, whatever the median income is.
Right. I
don't know who makes that these days.
What the state required was that they produce enough land zoned for multifamily housing to allow enough units of low-income housing to be built on those that acreage.
So finally, after stonewalling for, was it 20 years, the Board of Supervisors has been, and by stonewalling, not being able to get any state money for housing in that regard, they are finally allowing for the building of affordable, so-called affordable housing provided.
Nope, they're not doing anything for affordable housing. They're just making acreage available that
right,
could be
mean.
Built.
They're saying you can build, if anybody wants to, here it is.
Right, but the problem is that the 4 acres at Poor Clare's, which was the subject of recent hearings, Supervisor Perry decided that the only way that they would do that rezoning was to have it as senior housing. Now, senior housing is nice, but it doesn't do the job of providing low and moderate income housing for working families, which is where the biggest need is.
I got you.
So you can zone it, but it doesn't mean you're going to build anything there, or you're going to build affordable housing.
Is it only for seniors, or is it for anybody?
That's the proposal right now.
Well, does that meet the state's requirement for the housing element?
It doesn't, and the 30 acres that could be used for.
Are you saying that the Sentinel
housing.
Was lying to us in its headline, saying that they'd met the housing element requirement?
Right. That's not true. But
for heaven's sake, why would they do the Sentinel? How can I? Will I ever buy another Sentinel?
Well, the problem in the city of Santa Cruz is similar, and I the reason I say that is that they don't say how they're going to use the land that's available for low and moderate income housing. And in fact, you and I know that everything that's been built in the last 10, 20 years has been condos, which are ownership, which requires a six-figure income to be able to buy one of these properties. And if they have some inclusionary units, which they're required to have, those can be filled by people at the high end of moderate income, which in this case in Santa Cruz County is 90,000. You can have a $90,000 income and qualify as moderate, and therefore buy the inclusionary units. And again, the working family with a $60,000 or $70,000 income isn't getting any housing, and then they have this agreement with the university to house 3,000 of the students on campus, which means there's going to be a 1,500 students thrown into the rental market.
Right, and the university is again,
and they're building
whole,
nothing.
Right, that's in a whole second. You know, front there. We're talking with Ed Davidson. In fact, we've talked with Ed Davidson. I got a roll on you, Ed. Any final words on this?
Okay, well, tell your friend that there's nothing much we can do without changing the whole outlook of the council.
You're not suggesting capital punishment, perhaps?
I'm ready for a recall.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Thanks, Ed.
Bye-bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I am in the studio with our guest, who's been patiently tapping his fingers, George Rimbaud. George, you were telling us before that you've lived here in this place for 6 years. You paid, fairly nice rent, sounds like, for a two-bedroom. Although, how are the conditions in the house? Landlord's been pretty good? Not pretty good. Okay.
No, actually, I almost feel that plays part in what I mean, if you would, I'd love for you to come over and see my home, and you'd see why this affects me. So I have, like, 20 or 30 plants. I'm a carpenter, sir. I was involved in archwaying and taking I was in a little bit of the remodeling. And the person that got me into the place was living above me. He had a 4-foot iguana. I'm not necessarily a reptile person. I'm actually sort of phobic. And in our house, we have shower stalls versus a bathtub and whatnot. And there's a 6-inch tub around the shower this guy, this gentleman upstairs was going to go away for the weekend or whatnot, and he asked me if I would feed the lizard. And I thought there was no problem with throwing fruit in a bowl, and here you go. And he said, no, you have to hand feed it. And I'm like, oh, right.
So he ate your hand, eh?
Anyways, I'm saying, well, how about where it takes a dump? And he goes, he does it in the shower. And I'm like, oh, okay.
That doesn't sound good.
No, well, here it is. At the same time, I started getting really bad athlete's foot. And
it was iguana's foot, actually.
Iguana's
up poo-poo foot, perhaps.
Long story short, what he was doing, it was putting...
Did you complain about the landlord to this?
Well, there's an on-site manager type of dude.
What did the manager do when you complained?
He would write emails... To the
The iguana continued his
questionable behavior. Well, see, I have, I didn't bring it with me, but I have different letters that I was sent. And for the longest,
So there were a number of problems that developed with the landlord over the years.
They had to replace my ceiling in my bathroom twice. This guy would do is put a rubber stopper over the drain and turn on the shower. And one day, the very first day, he has a window in his door. The very first day, I come home from work and water just pouring through my ceiling. In the bathroom.
Well, let me ask you this. So you've been given an eviction notice now, 60-day eviction notice?
Yes.
When did you get that?
Last Thursday.
And I know that this has really concerned you because you don't have a lot of income.
No.
And you don't know where to go, and you're wondering if there's any way to fight this. I said Santa Cruz does not have any renter protection laws, far less rent control. I've been asking the city council to do something about this for two decades or abouts. But the city council isn't interested, or if they are, their interest is pretty low on the totem pole. Mike Rotkin will always tell you, we tried to get rent control in 1982 and we failed, and that's his response.
Where it sits with me, again, long story short, what the gentleman upstairs moved out, and 2 days later, I get an eviction notice.
So you think that, why, because he moved out? Why would you get an eviction?
Well, I think because they realized, because they had started showing it immediately. And I didn't know the guy was even moving out.
Maybe what they want to do is they want to remodel the whole place and get you out of there, but they don't want to have to pay you for...
Well, my place has been remodeled.
No, but they want to remodel the upstairs, too, which may involve, I don't know, replacing the ceiling. Or
they had, like I said, they had to replace the ceiling on me two different times because of the mold issue. I got flooded out 6 times in 6 years, and they never... And in my lease or rental agreement, it states no pets, and I kept calling... I never... personally talked to them. They sent us a letter saying when they bought the property, just keep things as they were. You deal with this guy's name Bruce, and you pay him the money and blah blah blah. So I would always go to him, and for some reason, and I got sent a letter by the company owns it now, Elan, stating that they heard about the leak in my ceiling and that I had black spot, which is mold. And first of all, it's not a leak. It's this guy turning.
Well, whatever. But I mean, the point is now: what is it you're what are you? What kind of? You come to us. Actually, you said you'd like to make an appeal on the radio for some kind
of help. Well, if anyone out there has any sort of idea, I went to Legal Aid and I came out of there clueless. I'm more confused than walking in. I'm supposed to hear something back from them tomorrow.
They probably told you something to the effect that the only time you can actually stop an eviction. Is something like retaliatory eviction if they're trying to evict you for organizing or complaining?
That's exactly what they said.
You have made a number of complaints, and you think that they're do you think they're evicting you because you complained or they you think
no I had
what you say on the radio, by the way, because if you're going to file a lawsuit, this goes into is documented.
What I'm doing here is whatever happens is whatever happens. I want some advice, some ideas. I just don't think that I should just sit on my hands and allow this to happen.
Is this happening to anybody else in your building or surrounding
you?
Are there a lot of evictions happening?
No.
There aren't a lot of evictions.
No.
Do you think it's just happening to you?
What I'm saying is the guy upstairs, he should have gotten evicted. I don't know if he got evicted or left on his own accord.
Right.
And I'm the one that went through 6 years, and then 2 days after he leaves, I get evicted. Well, I allowed 2 people to come into my house because they were waiting to get upstairs. And I said, basically, it's the same floor plan as upstairs. And they asked me how much I was paying, and I told them. And I go, why? And they just freaked. I go, why? What are you paying? And they're going to be paying $425 more a month than I am, and my place is slightly bigger because I, you know, I tore.
Well, he could also raise your rent. He wouldn't have to.
He wouldn't have
to evict you, I don't think.
Yeah.
You don't have a lease, right?
No, it's a month to month.
Right, and therefore, all he would have to do if he wants to keep you as a tenant, he could still say, we're raising your rent $400. That's not necessarily a cause for eviction. Have you talked to them as to why
they wouldn't? She wouldn't. The lady that handed me the eviction notice, I only seen twice before, and she didn't introduce herself. She told
me
she
talked to the manager?
The manager type? The guy that's on site?
Whoever handles it on site,
yeah. Yeah.
Did he tell you why he thought they were evicting you?
He says that she told him that they want to put, the owner of the building wants to put relatives in there.
I see. And do you think that, is that true or not?
I asked her why. When she handed me the eviction notice, it didn't have any reason why. It didn't have letter. I didn't even know who this woman was.
Well,
it ends up, it's a different.
They don't have to, you don't have to know who it is, and they don't have to tell you why. But
yeah, it sucks.
But you think it's true, though, that I mean, you know, it's interesting. I don't.
No, I seriously think it's about the money. I wouldn't have a problem.
So what are you going to do? What are your plans?
Well, you know what? I'd like to, you know, drag this out as long as I can. I know they told me August, and I think there's a reason why it was August. I mean, just to make room for students.
There's a 60-day. You got a 60-day eviction notice. And
yeah, because I've been there longer than a year.
You can take it to court, but then you may have to end up paying court costs. It's not really a subject, George, that I, as I told you originally when you talked to me, that I know much about. I do recommend that people who have eviction problems, if they don't get any satisfaction from legal aid, and apparently you haven't so far, contact the San Francisco Tenants Union for broader information on the state law. There's not, I don't think Santa Cruz County or city has much in the way of protections for tenants at all, but...
Again, I don't think I'd have a problem with the extra rent. I just wasn't given the option. And this I couldn't.
Right, I understand, but I don't think they
have to.
The other thing you could do is you could start. You get a bunch of neighbors to protest with picket signs. You could suggest. You know, you could try to criticize the company for what it's doing. I mean, it seems a little. Certainly, it seems arbitrary in times like this.
Well, of course,
the question is, I don't know your situation. I don't know. I mean, I'm getting one side of the story, and it's coming from you.
Yeah.
Let me give your number out so people who have, you know, who might have some advice for you or some thoughts can call you. But I suggest you probably need to research this yourself, you know. You need to contact the tenants union. I know you said you're not too hot on the computer, but, you know, get a friend to help you with that.
Yes.
Do you want to give out your
number? I'd love to. Area code 831-278-2871. I never carry my phone with me, but if you leave a short message in your number, I'd definitely call you back.
And you're looking specifically for what?
So advice on, I mean, if I have any options or, you know, there's some parts in that my roommate has brought up on the internet. He printed out some stuff. And it says you can prolong, you can make this go for months. And at this point, right now, since not having a job, it'd be easier for me to just pay the extra money versus trying to rent.
Your disability or something?
I'm surviving on unemployment extension.
Wow.
You know, in a matter of 3 months, my unemployment, that's going to run out.
You
also
may be a homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Yeah, yeah.
George, I've got to roll the next segment. But again, George's number is 278-2871. If you want to get a hold of him to give him a hand, you know, you might keep us advised of what's happening. Although, again, this sounds like an awfully personalized problem. Although, perhaps evictions are never, you know, we have a lot of evictions, but you say it's not happening to anybody else. It probably is happening to a number of people.
Well, not in the building that I'm in.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, wow. I have my sympathies.
And I appreciate that. I just don't want to sit on my hands on this.
For sure. Anyway, we're going to take a breather here. And you're welcome to hang and stay in the studio if you'd like, or make a quick retreat, whatever feels best. Again, if you want to get a hold of George, give him a call, 278-2871. And let's see if we can cue up another song here and roll forward. And let's see what we have. Try this one.
Oh, daughter, dear daughter, take a warning from me, and don't you go marching with the young C&D. For they'll rock you and roll you and shove you into bed, and if they steal you...
Oh, you can't spend a dollar when you're dead. No, you can't spend a dollar when you're dead. Singing ding-dong dollar, everybody holler. You can't spend a dollar when you're dead. Oh, the Yanks have just dropped anchor at the noon, and they've had their civic welcome for the tune. As they came up the measured mile, Bonnie Mary O'Argyle was wearing spangled drawers of lower goon. Oh, you can't spend a dollar when you're dead. No, you can't spend a dollar when you're dead. Singing ding-dong dollar, everybody holler. You can't spend a dollar when you're dead. And the publicans will all be dead swell, but it's just the thing that's shaped to ring the bell.
Ding-dong!
All the dollars, they will jingle. There'll be no a lassie single, even though them there be ballers out to hell. Oh, you can't spend a dollar when you're dead. No, you can't spend a dollar when you're dead. Singing ding-dong dollar, everybody holler. You can't spend a dollar when you're dead. Oh, the Glasgow moderator doesn't mind. In fact, he thinks the eggs are awfully kind. For if it's heaven that you're going, it's a quicker way than rowing, and there's sure to be anybody left behind. So you can't spend a dollar when you're beat. So tell Kennedy he's good to keep the heat. Singing ding-dong dollar, everybody holler. You can't spend a dollar when you're beat.
And deed means dead, for those of you who aren't from, I guess it's Scots again. You turn to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. The name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're hoping to get some guests in the studio shortly, and we'll see if they show up. Anita and I believe David are coming in to talk about how to oversee the police more effectively around the marijuana prohibition hysteria, which the police have been both enforcing and cultivating in our community. And we'll perhaps hear some more from them. In fact, I think I see one of those questionable members showing up even as I speak, the vicious Anita Henry, who's not only a Measure K committee victim or survivor, but also a member as well. But she's also a MedX worker who has been helping with providing medical marijuana to patients for more than a decade in Santa Cruz and fighting against the drug war in all its sinister forms.
I wanted to let you know that the Sub Rosa is on the corner of Pacific Avenue and Spruce.
Oh, thank you. So much for Sycamore, eh? Spruce it is. Yeah. I think I used to know that, but for some reason... these trees all get mixed together in my mind. So I'm going to play a little bit of more from the protest last Saturday in front of Bunny Shoes, since we're going to be coming back this Saturday. For those of you who don't know, Bunny Shoes is one of the downtown businesses. There were four specifically who signed declarations that were used by the city attorney in the court of Paul Burdick to criminalize sleeping for two homeless musicians, Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon. Actually, I think our interview would begin with an interview with Anna Richardson. And I think the actual businesses in question were looking for actually different kinds of prohibitions on the behavior of Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, such as prohibitions against trespass, against blocking a doorway, against littering, things of that sort. But instead, all that could be proved was that these two had slept at different places downtown illegally, by which we mean they fell asleep after 11 o'clock at night, not they were breaking in or improperly being on private property. They were on public property, but they slept in violation of the city's sleeping ban, which makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night, no matter where you are, even if you are in the most... remote place under a bridge hiding out, that's still illegal in Santa Cruz. And in a town with 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people and less than 40 places, 40 space sleeping space for 40 people, that is an example of both absurdity and cruelty, not to mention unconstitutionality. So, I rant on about this regularly and will continue to do so until it changes. But it's particularly abusive for businesses to sign on to this kind of bullshit. And that's why we're in front of Bunnies and we're saying to them, look, let's change this whole process. Put in your window, and we're asking all the stores to put in their window a little sign which says, we do not discriminate. We favor the right to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere for homeless people. And that seems to me to be a pretty mild statement to make that essentially tells the city council it is not okay to continue to ignore this issue and send out police and parks and rec rangers to go out and harass homeless people, even if it's on complaint. I don't care. I mean, there's some people who are nervous having somebody sleeping in a vehicle in their neighborhood, and it's none of their damn business. I mean, I may be nervous having somebody next door who, is a friend of Mayor Matthews and is a nasty, bigoted person for some reason, but I don't want, that's none of my business. They're next door. They have a right to be next door. They have a right to be a friend of Mayor Matthews. That's their business. Fine. No problem. I can't, raid their house and have the police move them away because I don't like them. But homeless people are in a position when even if they're doing absolutely nothing other than sleeping in their vehicle, that's criminal behavior in Santa Cruz. And the pretext that, we're just going after people on complaint is no excuse for just denying people basic human rights. So about, come Saturday, as we've been doing every Saturday for the last 2 weeks, we'll be in front of Bunny Shoes, encouraging you to come on down at 1 o'clock and join us in signing the pledge and distributing the pledge to the businesses that says, we urge patronizing businesses that display this pledge and questioning businesses that do not. So come on down and check that out. Here's some more tape from the protest last Saturday.
Anna Banana, you provoked all this problem downtown.
Civil nuisance, not a criminal nuisance.
Very civil of you there, Anna Banana. Anna, you're carting around a bunch of stuff with a stuffed tiger and a leather jacket, a shopping cart. What do you mean by this?
I'm trying to find a place to put it right now.
I see. Well, why don't you simply turn yourself into the jail, because you're obviously a criminal of some kind, right? You sleep at night, yes.
Yeah.
You sleep outside in Santa Cruz at night.
Yeah.
Well, that's illegal. Why don't you turn yourself in to the judge?
I try to stop sleeping, but I can't catch up to sleep debt,
Sleep during the day. That's the Santa Cruz way.
I do. I try. No. Actually, yesterday all day we slept.
You did sleep all day. So you're up at night keeping an eye for those criminal sleepers, and at night... you're up at night keeping an eye on the criminal sleepers, and during the day you're asleep. You know, I wanted to ask you a question or two, because you are... I think I recognize this individual, too. You look familiar, sir. I think I... the infamous Miguel... that's a little better. Now I don't recognize you anymore. He's put a sand pail over his head, which is... very interesting. Kind of an alien appearance there. So any reports, you guys, of any new citations or police harassment?
Citation for sleeping in a bush.
Where did you get this citation?
We waited till daytime and we were a little bit too tired to find a sensible spot and fell asleep in a bush. And
where was this?
Just outside of a parking garage.
So you violated the injunction? Are you confessing to criminal behavior?
No, this was outside of the parking garage. I think it was...
So you weren't arrested, immediately taken before the judge for contempt of court?
No, not yet.
Sounds like it was in the downtown area, though. There were declarations made against you, 29 declarations by police officers, by city employees, by managers of the property, begging, pleading the city to stop the civil public nuisance that you two have become. How do you feel about that?
Sorry, my living is a nuisance.
Well, I'm glad you see it that way.
I try not to be, in the way...
You considered suicide as an approach.
Sometimes, but, they won't let me.
They won't let you. I want to ask you specifically, we're in front of Bunny Shoes.
They get scared when I hang ropes from bridges and stuff, I think.
Understandably. Bunny Shoes has made a declaration in court about you and Miguel. Have you read the declaration?
I've read a bunch of falsifications about how we leave garbage and how we're supposedly aggressive, and I'm equally aggressive, but I don't see that as true, and I try to pick up any mess anywhere I go. Unless the cops are, like, running us out, you know, then we got to run because, you know, who wants to stay for a ticket? It's not like I'm trying to get these tickets.
Oh, indeed. Now they claim that inside the, I guess, the Palomar Breezeway, where Bunny's has another kind of storage depot for their store, you two broke in, not to the store, but to the Breezeway, and slept there at night. How do you plead to the charge?
Sleepy.
Now, when they awaken you...
We like going in there and playing music because it's got great acoustics, you know, and it's also a spot out of the rain, out of the cold, even if it's really cold, and the acoustics in there are good, and so businesses aren't open at that time, and so also, you know, that's like where we like to go play music and practice and record.
But she said she couldn't get into her store because you blocked the entrance.
The entrance of her store?
Well, her the little kind of storage office doorway.
I had never had her wake me up before, and anytime anybody's ever woke me up from a spot, I've always got up and moved. And if they allow me to clean up, you know, allow me the time to clean everything up, I always clean up and we get out of there. I don't know why she has such a big problem towards us. We try to get out of there before she even comes in, you know, now at all.
A likely story. I'll be right back. So, Miguel, let me ask you a question. Bunny's Shoes has claimed, I think her name is Chase, Michelle Chase, has claimed that you were rude, argumentative, and angry, and insisted, this is my office, when told to move one day in the breezeway of the area that's outside the Bunny's, not the Bunny's Shoe stores on Pacific Avenue, but the area that as you come out of the Palomar Hotel.
No, she also thought I was Adam, so it must have been Adam that was saying that stuff, because I don't use words like office. Unless it's office, sir.
I see. So, in other words, you think that this might be an innocent case of mistaken identity?
Well, usually that's what it is. But, you know, blame Lito. He's the guy with the drum.
Now, you say that I understand from Anna that you two were caught sleeping again. Is this true?
Yeah, we were.
And who was the officer, the sharp-eyed officer who caught you sleeping?
I don't know. Some sharp-eared officer who got a call.
And...
I haven't seen him before. That was a new officer. I haven't seen him before.
Was he civil to you?
Yeah, he was mellow.
And were you civil to him?
Of course.
Did you share a cup of coffee, a tea, a little chat?
No, but he didn't kick us in the head or pull his gun. So that's civil to me.
Now, has that ever happened to you in Santa Cruz?
Not in Santa Cruz.
Right on. Anything you want to add about other things you've noticed in the last week we should know about?
No, I'll think about that one.
All right, we'll be over here. A musician tuning up. Your name, sir, is?
John.
Now, John, you had a conversation with Chip of the Downtown Association. How did that conclude? We already know because you've recorded it, but just brief us again because I wasn't there.
Concluded fairly well, I'd say, sort of.
You wanted to get into the Downtown Association meeting. Did Chip agree to let you in?
Chip agreed, yes, and he was going to give me his contact information. However, when he left, I ended up with nothing, of course.
I'm sure Chip must have been called away by important spots on the sidewalk or some other problem.
I think he may have not been able to find it in his wallet.
You know his contact information. I can give it to you. Let me put it this way. The contact association information for the Downtown Association, which really isn't his because he's kind of hard to reach. I found, anyway. Well, what do you think of the protest today, John?
I think it's going fairly well. There's no volatility. I think it's fairly peaceful. I haven't seen any police that have been trying to start anything or cause any trouble or get in the way. Seems like a lot of the tourists and people walking by are very receptive to what's going on.
Boring. No, quite right. I might say it's been a mellow day. You, guitarist Christy, what do you think of all this?
I think we should get this guy to help us build huts on wheels and take over a parking lot. He says he...
Man with the biggest shopping cart.
Something like that. He says he'd teach people how to make those huts on wheels. We could just take over a whole parking lot. Everybody could sleep in huts.
And that's Hut 2-3. Thank you very much.
we're talking with.
What would you like to know?
What's your name?
My name's Linda.
And Linda, you say this is not your first trip to Santa Cruz.
No, it's not.
How old are you now?
Oh, I'm 55.
And how old are you when you first came to Santa Cruz?
I was about 15 or 16 years old.
Were you a runaway?
I was a runaway.
Why were you running away, and what were you running away from?
From my parents.
And what did you find here in Santa Cruz?
Club Seante.
Oh, yeah, that's burned down recently.
It did? Oh, my. That's not good news at all.
A couple years ago. Tom's Club.
Yeah.
He's gone. I mean, he's still around. He's trying to build it again. Yeah. Well, welcome back to Santa Cruz.
Good to be here.
Thank you for signing the pledge.
Thank you both.
We have a local person here who's signing the pledge. What is your name?
Lisa.
And Lisa, why are you signing this?
Well, we're all one group of people. So when one of us is stuck out on the street night after night, year after year, I mean, we're together, you know. I've been there.
How long were you out there?
Not very long, but I've been out there and I've worked with people for 20 years that have been on the street, mental health issues. It all comes from poverty.
Well, we should see a little more of that in the months to come, shouldn't we?
We should. Thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you.
I don't think the people who are homeless should be fined for sleeping outside because they don't have a choice.
I couldn't agree with you more. Unfortunately, the businesses generally don't give a shit, or they feel powerless. I'm not sure which it is. You know? I mean, it's a mixture of the things. So this is what, this pledge is a way of saying to the businesses, you know, change your attitude. We don't want people to have to sleep in front of your business. We want people to be able to sleep legally somewhere.
I think sleeping legally somewhere.
Yeah.
Sleeping outside someone's business if someone's been drinking is not such a great thing for business. But I do believe in the people that should have rights. Anything.
And what is your name, donor?
My name is Valerie.
Thank you, Valerie. Appreciate it. And if you want to volunteer, we have a volunteer list, too.
All right. I'm disabled, but I do have a home, right?
Right on.
Wonderful for me. I could be in this position easily.
I'm glad to hear you're concerned about it. Many are less than you. You say a couple years ago, Valerie, you went to traffic court with a friend. And
we won, or he won, actually. And there were people in there that were homeless who had been ticketed for sleeping in the park. And they couldn't afford the fine. How do you keep ticketing people who can't afford to eat when they should have the right to sleep?
You say, it's the law, it's my job, it's not my fault. I'm just following orders. Those are various ways you can.
All right, so good old Ronald Reagan, he took all the institutions away where people who were mentally had issues. He closed all those places down. And there are people that are out here that need help, that can't work, and they should be allowed to sleep.
Thank you, Laura.
Okay.
And that sounds like that's the, if not the end of the protest, certainly a pause in the protest. So we'll pause here because in the studio with us we have the redoubtable Measure K mistress, as we might call her, it's Anita Henry, as I mentioned before, and we're still waiting for David Partida to show up. Hopefully he will, but perhaps not. I haven't heard from him, but he did say he was going to come in. Maybe he'll call in. We've also contacted Measure K, former Measure K Vice Chair Eric Rice, and I've left a message for former Chair Larry True. And I guess we put out some other calls. But what we really want to be talking about is something you can actually acquaint yourself with directly if you want, because the enterprising video journalist Rick has put together a video. doesn't put it together. He actually just sat there during the Measure K committee, which was on Monday night, I guess, and he videoed all 45 glorious minutes of that particular meeting.
40 minutes. And he did put it together. He did a great job. I mean, he put text in and kind of folds up when it's done. I was impressed that he could edit. And
right, but it's not censored or shortened in any way, as far as I know.
No, but it is 40 minutes.
Right. So it's unusual for a committee of any kind to have so short a meeting, particularly a committee that meets only twice a year, particularly a committee that has been mandated by the voters, not by city council, but by the voters of this community, actually kind of over the indifference or objections of the Santa Cruz City Council. So for those who want to actually hear the Measure K committee, all you need to do is go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is also known as indiebay.org, and you can hear it and you can see it both. It's a video, it's an audio. It's downloadable, and it's also viewable on the website. What you do is you go to Santa Cruz Indie Media. You can Google for Santa Cruz Indie Media. And then you can look for the story at the extreme right edge of the screen, which is...
Or what's even easier, Robert, they can go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and right on the right side is a link.
It's called the Measure K Oversight Committee. I don't know which is easier. It may be easier to Google for Indie Media, but maybe not.
Indiebay.org.
The formal address is www.indiebay.org/Santa Cruz for those of you who are quick at picking things up as I rattle them off. If you're not, Google for Santa Cruz Indie Media, and you'll get it. So that's if you want to see the whole thing. The reason we think it's important is has little to do with the fact that nothing gets done at these meetings. In fact, they intentionally seem to be interested in pretending that something is getting done by issuing a semi-annual report, but actually there's no real oversight being happening there. But maybe what I should do is just sort of leave it to you, Anita. You're the one who actually, if there was any intelligent discussion that came out of that Measure K committee meeting, it was you and the public, frankly, not anybody else on the committee. I mean, I noticed a few new committee members, Bill Christie, who's a nice guy, a local dentist, who I think I talked to you about him earlier. I think he's a friend of Catherine Byers. I think he was appointed by Catherine Byers. He was also the head of the Citizens Police Review Board back in the mid-90s. At the same time that the police shot dead Happy John Dine, claiming that he had been brandishing a toy gun, when in fact every non-police witness said that was not the case, that they saw nothing in his hand, that there was no indication of a threatening move or gesture or a toy gun, which was found nearby later on, actually. Some claim one of the police officers, Officer Overed, pulled it out of his waistband and thrown it to the ground. And covering for his partner, Connor Carey, who shot Dine dead with two bullets. But anyway, Christie was the head of the CPRB and took no action to do an independent investigation of this, what many of us regarded as a homicide. And certainly maybe negligent homicide, if nothing else, a manslaughter, we don't know. And Connor Carey got no discipline at all that we heard of. That was 12 years ago in the case of a homeless man. Actually, he had a home at that point, but he was an activist who was often involved in homeless causes. And he was kind of a way-out character, as sort of the leftover, one of us leftover hippies from the 60s who was disabled in some respects. Anyway, Christie was, he's a nice guy as a dentist. I don't know, he may well be a very good dentist. In fact, I've heard positive things about how he treats his patients very well, including low-income patients. But he certainly is not the person to put in charge of overseeing the police if he's using the same methods he was using 12 years ago. At least that would be my perspective. You have a number of people on that committee. I know you had James King, who's another, maybe he's the appointee by Byers. Actually, I'm not quite sure who appointed King. But I actually got a list of the Measure K committee appointments from the city clerk's office today, but unfortunately the file they sent me was so garbled that it has to be assembled piece by piece. Maybe you got a better file.
I was going to say, at least they responded to you. I wrote to Tina after the meeting asking her to send me the email addresses.
Tina Scholl, the
our staff
person who staffs both the Measure K committee and is liaison with the police department and seems to be more interested in defending the police department than in asserting the rights of the community.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to be able to communicate with the other committee members before December, so I asked for their email addresses and phone numbers, and I haven't heard from her yet.
Right, yeah, she's...
She didn't come to our meeting on Monday night, and I found that very interesting after what happened at our last meeting in December, that she would not come, and in her place, she would send someone from the city manager and the city attorney's office, probably assuming you would be there, and didn't show up.
No, I didn't show up at the meeting because I was sure that you, and in fact, I thought you guys did a great job of handling. There were a number of members of the audience who came and spoke. One of the things that, of course, would have been nice to have, which you didn't have, would be individuals making specific complaints about marijuana enforcement by the police department not being the lowest priority. I've actually gotten such complaints.
I have heard complaints also, and if the community knew that there was a Measure K oversight committee and they didn't have to wait 4, 5, 6 months to come, perhaps we would get those grievances.
Right. Unfortunately, because that is the case, what we need to do, if you are a person who is... knows someone who has been cited or harassed or ticketed or arrested for any kind of marijuana offense that has happened on private property.
In the last 3 years.
You know, even in the last three years, but certainly in the last 6 months, give a call to Anita because she's kind of representing, she seems to be the only active member of the Measure K committee. Although I must say that David Partita, who arrived, who is the new member and who was going to speak here on the air today and apparently is... decided not to show up or maybe can't make it for some reason, and of course hasn't called in, unfortunately. He did vote against the semi-annual report, whereas you, Anita, only abstained. So we can say that he is a more militant opponent of this rubber stamping process.
Well, it was interesting that Christie approved it, you know, and that's making the assumption he actually read it and understood it. And it's interesting to me, I would have loved to have posed a question to any of those committee members about any item in that semi-annual report, and I would almost guarantee, I'd put money, that they wouldn't be able to answer it, because I don't think they read them. Because if they did, they would have questions. When you come back 6 months later, you've got to, I mean, don't you have a question or a comment about a semi-annual report? There's nobody ever has a question, and this is what's bothering me.
Well, of course, the point is that the semi-annual report is essentially the police department saying, yes, we had 123 cases involving marijuana. No, none of them involved police activity that was in private, that involved no other charges, and that, what's the third condition? That someone was over 21. All those conditions, none of those conditions were met let's put it this way, those three conditions were not present altogether in all these cases. In other words, it was somebody who was under 21, or it was somebody who was in public, or it was somebody who was arrested for something else or cited for something else. We were called for some other reason. So it's not even something that we Measure K people should be concerned with. The problem is that it's the police department that is making that judgment
and it should be
your committee.
Right. And they keep saying this, don't be concerned. There's nothing to be concerned with. Just approve the semi-annual report. And I've refused for the last two meetings to accept the reports.
Let us say rather you abstained on the report. You didn't refuse to accept. The refusing to accept would say voting no. You didn't vote no. David Partita voted no.
Yeah,
you abstained.
God bless him.
Abstained.
Okay. I abstained.
All right. But you spoke very eloquently about it, and I think that probably influenced his vote.
Yeah, I thought I actually did fairly well, and I have to tell you, I was quite nervous. It's really not easy to sit up there in council chambers and have someone from the city manager and the city attorney and present questions to them. I mean, you need balls to do that. My palms were perspiring. But when I did look at the video, I was proud of myself.
Yeah, I was proud of you, too, and I was proud of the other people who came to that meeting. What I should be doing, perhaps, is play the video or play the audio part of the video. But the thing is, since it's accessible on IndieBay, I like to play stuff that isn't so easily reachable, like these interviews that you were hearing a moment ago from the protest. These voices you can't really hear usually elsewhere. You can't go to the archives. You can hear earlier archives from other people or perhaps from some of the same people talking about earlier incidents, because this show is archived at www.huffsantacruz.org, for those of you who are interested. You're listening to Free Radio, by the way, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, assuming the collective doesn't self-destruct. Which, who knows, it may do. We're having lots of internal problems that I'm not supposed to talk about.
Again?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And I myself am rather loose-lipped. I believe loose lips actually save ships instead of sinking them, this not being World War II, but sometimes it seems like it in free radio. With me in the studio is Anita Henry, who's a member of the Measure K Committee, the group that is...
The Overlook
Committee.
The Overseers.
The Overlook Committee, as we like to call it. They overlook whatever they can and rubber stamp whatever they can't overlook. Yep. Or both, as the case may be. I don't know. I have the sneaking suspicion that Tony Madrigal called David Partita and told him not to come on the show, but I really hope that's not true. Because
oh, it's so disappointing. When I heard that he was going to come on tonight, Robert, I felt so good. I said, oh, we are looking at positive days ahead.
People are nervous about challenging authority. I mean, you know, Eric Rice did come on my show after he resigned as vice chair last year of the Measure K Committee. Larry True did not. He was chair, but both of these guys... essentially said they felt that and I don't want to misstate them, and I think Eric may be listening in. He should call up to, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, and even if, or just call up if he wants to add anything to this or make his own statement.
Or give some advice.
Yeah, or, you know, sing a song, you know, whatever you want to do. The more public interest, the better. Has to do with, these resignations happened because they realized the city was making a joke of this committee. They wanted to make sure it met infrequently. They stacked it with people who were hostile. They had the city attorney back the police department in essentially removing its fangs, so that they removed the presumption that the police department should provide records that people can look at to decide if Measure K is compliant. There's a lot of babble about, oh, you guys can go use the Public Records Act, which I actually have suggested you do, Anita, but you know, I know,
shouldn't, but I shouldn't have to do that.
No, you shouldn't have to do it. But you know,
they're making it difficult.
That unfortunately, really, I actually made that suggestion to Theodora, or was it Tim Rinker, or I don't know, one of the many people who were funded to pass Measure K 2 years ago when it was used. It was essentially kind of a precursor of tax and regulate marijuana to show that, you know, if.
Well, they were right out front when this was going on. I mean, Theodora is the one who was named in the lawsuit.
Right, and I think she allowed Ben Rice to manipulate, or Ben Rice didn't really know what he was doing. I'm not quite figured out what happened with that situation, but frankly, it didn't look good to me, and I know what happened was that when they removed the requirement that there essentially be the records for the Measure K committee to look at, as there are in other cities, Oakland, Seattle, Santa Barbara, and there's no reason there can't be in Santa Cruz. I don't care what hogwash the city manager or the city attorney tell you. Then that, the basic raison d'etre for this committee was destroyed, because you obviously can't oversee something if you can't look at the documents. You know, you're supposed to trust the people who you're trying to oversee. I mean, that's seems to be a contradiction in terms. If anybody has any comments, it's time to call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number. Anita, you've got a whole sheaf full of documents. Are there comments you'd like to make?
I just like to be thorough. But, yeah, I did want to make a comment because we're talking about Eric, who was on the committee and then resigned because he saw we weren't going to go anywhere. You know, this has been – measures have been passed in several counties throughout the state, and one is Santa Barbara. And they passed Measure P, which is lowest law enforcement priority. And there was some communication back and forth between Eric and Mr. Allen down in Santa Barbara, and I'm fortunate enough to have some copies of the communications that they had. And Eric had asked Mr. Allen, who was also an attorney down there in Santa Barbara, questions about the lawsuit that was filed to take the teeth out of the measure, or the teeth had been taken out of the measure. And Mr. Allen wrote back to Eric, and he said that there were no alterations to the ordinance down in Santa Barbara as it was passed by the voters. And, in fact, I doubt very much if it was legal for your council to change the provisions that the voters adopted. Here, the city attorney brought a court challenge to our ordinance, which was rejected in the courts, and the city was then ordered to pay the attorney fees. The measure that voters in Santa Cruz approved called for the local police department to cooperate with the committee in providing data so we could monitor the enforcement of the of the ordinance. And it also stated that we were empowered to request additional information from any law enforcement officer who engaged in enforcement activity of marijuana offenses. You know, so I don't know if it's legal or illegal, but to me it's ethically very wrong. We're not the only county that passed a measure like this, and they seem to be working fine in Santa Monica, Oakland, Santa Barbara, and wherever else they were passed. And I just don't know why the resistance is here.
Well, I think there are four letters that sum up why there's that resistance. SCPD, Santa Cruz Police Department. We actually, if you go online to look at the video at Santa Cruz Indie Media or www.indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, you can see a comment by Craig Canada, who's an activist for medical marijuana, a previously homeless man who has fought to have the right to medicate for 3, 4, 5 years now, longer, I'm sure, actually, but a number of years in Santa Cruz. He's come to Huff for help and gotten some help there. He's maligned some of us at different times online, but that's okay. Everybody goes their own way at different points. But he was there speaking up, and also...
But he's been pushed really hard by the police. I mean, he was really
given a really hard time. I think it's important for... We wrote a long article about how... Linda LeMaster wrote a long article about a year and a half ago showing how there was actually... The necessity defense was used to defeat the sleeping ban when he was accused of sleeping outside, and that was illegal. We've talked about how absurd that is, but how real, and how that's the basis of our protest coming up this weekend at Bunny's Shoes at 1 o'clock. Come on down. But he was able to prevail in court by showing that he was not allowed to go into any of the shelters because he was a medical marijuana user. They would not allow him in, even though medical marijuana is permitted under state law and protected under state law. And we won that case in the court of Judge Deneen Guy. Strangely enough, 2 months later, when the same facts were brought in the second case with exactly the same question, she reversed her decision. It sounded like, frankly, someone had gotten to her.
Well, and rightfully so, because this isn't a man that just wanted to get high. I mean, this is a man that needed to medicate.
Mm-hmm.
He
wrote on that part of the website where you can actually view your last meeting of the Measure K committee. It would be interesting also for you to check out the meeting of the Measure K committee before that. But if you went to the city records, you would not be able to do that because Tina Scholl either lost the tape or the equipment was damaged. I kept trying to get some clarification from her about what actually happened. The only tape that was made of that meeting was the one I made after I got into the meeting, past the locked door, and I'd been denied access to the room and then not allowed to speak. But here's what Craig Canada wrote. The Measure K committee met on June 15, 2009, and accomplished as little as possible thanks to the transparent subterfuges of Chair Mary Lou Gecky, who is also an executive director of United Way and therefore the handmaiden of the local Chamber of Commerce. Obviously aligned with Mary Lou or Vice Chair James King, who suggested they discussed cutting the meetings from twice a year to once a year, and member William Christie, who provided the third vote to accept the so-called report. This was the first meeting of Tony Madrigal's appointee, David Partida. He mostly listened, saying little, if anything, but when he voted firmly and without hesitation against approving the report, it was obvious he had been paying attention. The most telling point for me was when Anita Henry requested some sort of information about those 123 marijuana arrests or citations, beginning with how many were arrests and how many were citations, and Chairwoman Gecky decided at the next meeting they would look at one sample of the information that could be provided according to the city attorney's interpretation of state law. Keep in mind, it was the city attorney that represented the police department against Measure K, with the result that sections requiring a separate report to be filled out by the police for marijuana arrests and requiring the police to provide any other information to the committee were stricken from the ordinance. Measure K was passed by 68% of Santa Cruz voters. I think it was 64%, but yeah. Eric Rice and Larry True have previously resigned in disgust. Larry True stated, "I joined the committee looking for a way to serve the community. I feel like the committee is no more than a rubber stamp for the police department." Two members were not present, Carolyn Hawkins and Candy Jackson. Ryan Coonerty's appointment to the committee has yet to be made. The next meeting was scheduled for 5:30 p.m. December 14th. 2009. Given the committee has been stacked by the City Council with members hostile to Measure K and to oversight and civilian review of the police department, I expect the committee to vote to meet only once a year, and that was what James King wanted, I believe, and to quash any attempt to verify or examine the numbers provided to it by the police department. Thank you, Craig Canada, for making that report. Of course, you know, I agree with you, so obviously it's always nice to know you're not alone in your view. But, I think that it's very succinctly put. I think it clarifies what pretty much certainly key points to be drawn out of that meeting. And I guess for me the question again is always, Anita, what's next? What can be done in the meantime to deal with the drug prohibition war? And we're hoping next year, 2010, there'll be some, you know, statewide initiative. We were hoping for that last year. It never happened.
I really don't know. I was hoping for some new blood on this committee, and I'm hoping that we have it in the new appointees, David, and the other fellow, I can't think of his name right now. But what I plan to do, and again, I'm thanking Craig on the air for posting those comments. I appreciate that, Craig, if you're listening. I plan to meet with Craig at some point and try to organize some kind of citywide meeting, get-together, it'll take place either at the library or if I can get a room over at the City Hall, and just to let the public know that the Oversight Committee exists, when we meet, possibly what they could do to try to get us to meet more often. People that may have a grievance can come out. I really don't know what to do, Robert, because I'm only one of six or seven appointees on that committee, and I'm the only one that seems to be interested in carrying out the will of the voters. So I don't know what's going to get done, but I can tell you I surely appreciate at the meeting Monday night that so many people came out and spoke. Coral and Bernard and Lila, I don't know if I'm missing anybody, Rick was there, and it just felt good to have people come and show their support because, you know, I'm working for a large population out there. There's a lot of people in Santa Cruz that want to use marijuana. We have two thriving dispensaries that are making a pretty penny off it. The city isn't collecting any taxes from it, not that I want to see prices go up. But how is it benefiting the larger community? How is it benefiting the people that need it most? You work with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We should be trying to find some money to put in to programs like that to help those people. We should be finding money to help Free Radio Santa Cruz. We should be finding money to help all the things that are helping all of us, those of us that aren't in power, that don't have the money and the influence. So thank God for you, Robert.
And for you, Anita. And well, this is Mutual Admiration Society here. I just got a text message, which I got a phone message that said it was a text message. I don't usually get those, but sounds like we got someone at the door. I think his name may be Partida. Yes. All right. The prodigal son has arrived. It looks like it's that curmudgeonly David Partida who just doesn't go along with the rest of the Measure K committee. Welcome to the studio, David. Use mic 3 if you want.
Thanks.
Yeah. And we were afraid that you've been scared off, that Tony Madrigal directed you not to come or something.
Nah, I choose whatever I want to do.
I'm glad that's the case. You certainly chose what you were going to do on Monday night.
He's quite perspired. I can see you're a very busy young fellow. He's got perspiration dripping down his forehead, Robert. He wanted
He's
to get
sweaty.
Here.
He's sweaty. You go take
you
a shower
so
right now.
Thank you so much for coming.
Riding that bike, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. Welcome. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks.
David, let me just do a little bit of a background here. You're on the Measure K committee,
mm-hmm.
and you're a student?
Yes.
Where are you student at?
UC Santa Cruz.
What do you study?
Community studies and legal studies.
And what does that involve? What do you mean, community studies and legal studies? What are you really doing up there? Selling dope? Come on, tell us the story.
Not on the air. But,
certainly not.
not just studying. I'm trying to get my degree so I can be a better resource for my whole community where I come from in San Diego. And community studies was the first choice that attracted me to UC Santa Cruz, so I chose that one. I also want to be like an immigration lawyer and labor lawyer, so that's why I mixed it with legal studies. So that's what I'm doing up there.
How did you first hear about the Measure K committee?
Councilmember Tony Madrigal said, hey, you want to be at this committee? And I said, yeah, I'd like to be at the committee.
Yeah, he'd been dicking around for about 9 months without appointing anybody, and we finally said, I was constantly harassing him, finally, because he refused to accept Bernard Klitzner as a member, and we some other people came up to him. He didn't want them, but so I'm glad he found somebody.
Isn't David his first appointee?
No, I believe there was a prior appointee.
It would have to be Larry or Eric.
Or some person who was a short-term appointee.
No, I believe that this is Tony Madrigal's
I'm
first
not sure.
appointment.
I think he had not made...
Part of the Latino Affairs Committee?
No, this is the first appointee.
To the Measure K Committee.
Oh, to Measure K?
We think that there was somebody he appointed before you. But
I've been on since the beginning.
She doesn't think so. I think there may have been. But in any case, he was really slow in appointing people. And I'm glad he appointed somebody finally. I'm glad he appointed somebody who sees things in the right way. That is, say, my way. But, you know... Why don't you talk about what was your experience of the first meeting of that Measure K committee? What impressions did you come away with?
At first, I felt kind of weird, you know, because that's the same seating arrangement, the same like kind of style of running the meetings the city council uses, you know. And every time I go to those meetings, it's to protest the city council. So it was like, oh, I'm sitting in the wrong chair today, you know. But it was okay, really bureaucratic, you know, the share by share and really controlling the discussion, not letting, like, people express themselves. Like, Anita took the floor for, like, 10, 15 minutes, you know, and that's kind of like the meetings that I'm used to going to where people can just speak however they want to speak and not be judged, you know, or not be videotaped or like, scared off by some city attorney or city person.
Yeah, they'd have the assistant city attorney there. I believe her name was... I got her name here somewhere. She was trying to...
She was quite intimidating. She had a stare. She looked me deep in the eyes, and I started to perspire a little. I need to make a comment right now. The reason that there was a videotape, there's never a videotape at those meetings, but the reason that meeting was videotaped is because at our meeting in December, it was quite a hullabaloo, and Robert intentionally or unintentionally was locked out. And he had to go around to the side of the building, and he was knocking on the window for somebody to get up and let him in. And we were doing oral communications then. Robert wanted to speak, and they wouldn't let him speak. And I said, let him speak, and they said, no, he can't speak. And for at least 5 minutes, it went back and forth, and it got a little hot and heavy. After the meeting, there were requests for the tape recording, because Tina, our staff person, records them on a tape recorder, and it was lost.
So however, I did Robert make a recording while I was there.
So Robert has a tape of that meeting if you ever do want to hear our December meeting.
The thrill is probably, you know, you barely wait to hear the meeting. I have a problem with these meetings because they get nothing done, as you can see.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing happens except they show how powerful they are and how they can, you know, control the situation. I mean, your view that, you know, you come to a meeting and why not just everybody talk, sit around and convey what information they have. People will ask questions back and forth. That actually was what happened at the first few meetings. We sat around in a smaller room around a table, and members of the committee and members of the community kind of had equal time.
And the meetings didn't last a half hour. And it's funny, the meeting on Monday lasted 40 minutes. The meeting in December lasted 35 minutes. So we're only meeting for like 30 minutes every 6 months to say, okay, I approve the semiannual report. I approve the minutes. I just can't keep doing it. And that's why I feel so refreshed that you're on the committee now, because it's been a losing battle. But I've said at every meeting, I will not resign. You will not get rid of me. I will fulfill what I have been appointed.
Well, the problem is it's kind of a nice little drama every 6 months, but my concern is not
it's
that.
It's fun.
It's a little fun drama that we can bring into
unless you're the one that's getting arrested.
We can bring into the studio, but it has nothing to do with what's going on the rest of the 5.5 months, and that's the problem. The question is, what's going to happen now? Anita's going to go back to, you know, work on whatever she's doing. You know, you'll go back and do your thesis or whatever you're doing over the summer, and, you know, they will say, oh, you see, we did what the voters said. We have our Measure K committee, and they passed their report, which said the police is doing just fine. Of course, the only way that's going to change is if there's, like, some lawsuit or, like, a bunch of members of the Measure K committee, past and present, maybe the two of you and the former chair and the former vice chair, all get to have a press conference and say, this is a bunch of horse shit. This is bogus. We're starting our own Public Records Act group to demand of the police department all the records we need. For example, I believe there was some false information given out by the city attorney, the assistant city attorney. Like, I'm not sure of this, but it's not that the police are prohibited from giving you the records. It's that they have the discretion not to give you the records. And what Measure K tried to do is make sure that you got that discretion. And the Santa Barbara attorney who advised you, Joe Allen, that it was not appropriate for them to overrule the voters, the city council, is correct, but they didn't overrule the voters. What they did was is they got a consent agreement between the person who passed the initiative, Theodora Carey, and her attorney, Ben Rice, to agree to change it so as to avoid further legal problems from the police department. In other words, they had to get a consent agreement. But that doesn't mean that the rest of you have to consent to agree to not look at the public records. And I think that if we actually demand the public records for these things, tomorrow we could go in and demand 123 public records. I want to see them, not as a member of the Measure K Committee, but as a member of the public. You can also say, I am also a member of the Measure K Committee, and I'm wondering why the hell we're not doing our job. And because we can't do our job, we formed an extra legal group to do our job.
Right. Yeah. See, Robert, you know, I think we, you know, or I know as a committee member that I can do that. I can go to the police station.
But you haven't done it.
But the point is, I shouldn't have to do it, and I'm going to, Robert, and I want the staff person who is supposed to be doing our administrative work to meet my request.
But so what? She won't. She'll ignore you until December. So what's your next step?
To meet with Craig and put out a flyer and
That's
try
good.
To organize a meeting to take place at the public library.
That's good.
And be prepared for the next meeting. That's all I can do.
And she'll keep saying to you, well, if you're so concerned about this issue, why are you sitting around waiting for us? Why don't you go do it yourself?
Yeah, I really expect
what,
nothing from her. She
but
couldn't
that's
even
what,
get back
but that's
to me
what
with
members of the community will say,
numbers.
Too. If you really want to know what's in those records, go make the Public Records Act request. I mean, you know, or are you just trying to dick with us and try to get us to do something? I mean,
what I really want are the people who are getting the citations and arrests to speak to us.
Well,
there were, you know, there's 123 this prior 6 months, but before that there were 184.
That's a second issue, whether you can actually get the people who are already being hassled by the courts to come forward and try to help with this stuff, where it's far less likely than you'll be able to get. Maybe you'll get an attorney or two or a legal worker or two or somebody who you know up at university to help you go in and get the public records or demand the public records and have the police department say, we're not going to give you the public records unless you give us $1,000 or unless we can redact all these names, which they don't have to do. But if you put them on notice that this is what you want and you put it under some public spotlight, you may put pressure on them to first do that, and then secondly, and this is, of course, the real objective, to stop making, if that's what they're doing, and it's hard to tell because we don't have the records, bogus marijuana arrests in violation of Measure K. I can't really accuse the police department. I can accuse the police department of doing that in four cases. We brought forward at the last report. They involved complaints we made. And again, it's hard to tell because we didn't get a chance to look at the police reports. I think Rotkin, your appointer, Anita, told me, I think he claimed that these were not valid cases. He had looked into them. Mike Rotkin, as well as being a community studies instructor up at UCSC, is also, and I defend his work up there. Of course, that has nothing to do with his bad work downtown, unfortunately. As you know, or as you may know, he claimed that as a member of the Public Safety Committee, which is the city's council subcommittee that oversees, overlooks, in fact, the police department and the fire department, who are now getting a huge segment of the budget. I don't know if you saw that in the paper today or yesterday.
I did read that.
The pie graph is huge. They're getting the big bite, and it's all, of course, they're claiming it's all about public safety and so forth. And you know, it's really hard to come up with real assessments as to what's going on with that because they are such a powerful lobby. But he claimed that these cases that we pointed out, I think it was Brian Parquette and Craig Canada and Dennis Holt.
How about Donna Dice and Linda Allen? I mean, these are middle-aged women. I that story sticks in my mind.
Well, Donna Dice was not on private property.
This is not true.
When supposedly they were called for marijuana. So they can claim it was on public property and therefore is not Measure K compliant.
In the meantime, they broke her arm. That's all I
and
care
And then they
about.
Broke her
and
arm.
And then they lied and
of
said
course.
She threw coffee on them.
And,
come
and,
on,
and
Robert.
That, but remember, she pled guilty to littering. That's how she, after a whole year, they had her plead guilty to littering.
This is a very small, frail, middle-aged woman.
62 or 61, disabled as well. And it's the so-called pretext was marijuana, not Measure K compliant marijuana, but marijuana. And I think she also got a card afterwards, medical marijuana eventually. And she wasn't even charged with marijuana possession. She was charged with resisting arrest, which, of course, you're probably familiar, is the charge that's used when they can't find anything else.
And it was kind of after this that Eric Rice and Larry True, our chair and co-chair, resigned, because we did have three people come with grievances
that were not initially included in the last semi-annual report.
And it wasn't in the minutes.
Or at least I think it had to be amended. But in any case, the real problem is that I think you really kind of put your finger on it, Dave, when you said that it seemed a very bureaucratic procedure. It wasn't one where people could say, well, there's this information for you, and there's, you know, what about this, and so forth. Hey, you know, maybe object, and maybe not. As we had at the first few meetings, which weren't in the city council chambers, which were in a smaller room. And the reason that could happen was because we had three sympathetic committee members. We had Larry True, Eric Rice, and yourself. And then we had the hostile people come in. We had James King, who I guess is now vice chair.
You did notice how hostile James King is.
Yeah. But again, from either any other first impressions of this meeting that you had, what did you expect when you walked into the room? What did Tony lead you to expect? Anything?
Nothing. We were supposed to meet before, but we didn't get a chance to meet, so I was just reading, and I walked to the thing, and closed my book, and started the meeting.
And what was the first thing you noticed about the whole thing?
Nice chairs, the little thing with my name on it.
Oh, yeah.
You got your name tag now, man.
I haven't gotten it, but I'm looking for it.
You're looking, that's right. That's true. You have a name tag without a name at the moment, yeah.
Little placard make us feel so important.
You know, it's interesting. The Citizens Police Review Board had these little placards. Citizens Police Review Board was, it ran from 1995 to 2003 when it was suddenly killed by the city council. The same city council that wouldn't pass the Measure K committee, that had to be passed by the voters over the city council. The city council didn't vote this committee. In fact, they've refused to have 6 months, to have more frequent sessions, and they've supported the city attorney and the police department in defanging it. So the city council is not on your side. The community might be on your side, and that's what Larry and Eric, who were previously chair and vice chair, were thinking of doing, was doing outreach to the community to try to mobilize that. But the problem was they kept working through Tina Scholl. And Tina Scholl is a member of, she wasn't there when you were there. She's the staff person who is not interested in seeing an independent Measure K committee, I believe. I don't think she's interested in seeing them pass the reports, I think. She gets her marching orders from the city manager.
Well, I did mention at the meeting that it's every meeting we go to, she reminds the entire committee how little power we have and how little we can do, and kind of puts us in our proper place.
Yeah, she acts as though she's sort of the phantom chair.
She is the staff person. She should be there, you know, working at my, you know, I don't want to get uppity.
Instead,
or anything.
She corrects you, and she puts
me in my place, or she ignores me, and
right.
You know.
But you see, in a way, that's,
I don't like it.
Of course, I'm glad you don't. But that's the reality of this whole system of government. The people who are elected don't really make much difference unless they act out of the ordinary and they have strong constituencies behind them. Otherwise, it's the staff, because they are paid. Unlike city council members who are paid very little.
And paid well.
And committee members who are paid nothing. You guys aren't paid a thing. You just get, you know, the prestige of going, oh, you know, I'm on the committee now, you know. And the thing about
good.
that really pisses me off is that when I continue to repeat this poor thing about poor Mark Halfmoon, who I like as an individual.
Who?
Poor Mark Halfmoon, who was the chair. He was the African-American chair of the last Citizens Police Review Board. And then he's working at Community TV. He does a whole program there. He was doing it. Got on the board of directors there. He's a poor guy. He's working hard. He put in a lot of work on the Citizens Police Review Board, trying to work on use of force by the police, racial profiling, economic and social profiling, selective enforcement. But the minute that they lost their positions because they disbanded the police review board, he stopped. He didn't, you know, he talked about doing a Citizens Police Review Board in exile, but they wouldn't do it. Even though they weren't getting paid anything before, But they had their little plaques in front of their names, and they had a little space on the city council, and they had the staff member coming in. It was like, as long as you recognize us, we're legitimate, but if you don't recognize us, then we sort of dissolve into a formless mass. That is something that we have to form our own institutions. We have to form our own groups. We have to recognize that the real legitimacy springs from your interaction with the community, not from the titles that these overpaid bureaucrats give you, who are primarily not particularly interested in the kinds of changes that have to be made in this community. You know, at least that's my perspective on it.
Well, that's the broader issue for me, is that I spend a lot of time downtown in the city, and I talk to a lot of people, and I don't think that the staff or the council seem to get it, that when I was appointed to sit on this committee, I was going to do my job. That's what they want me to do. So when people stop me on the street and ask me questions, I should be able to give them the answer.
Right, but my point is that the committee is not going to let you do your job, and therefore if you're really going to do your job, you have to do it independently of the committee, which means, and you're beginning to do this, Anita, although it's really difficult for you. I mean, you're not, you know, you're getting on in years, you're disabled, you don't have a lot of financial resources, you're in the middle of an economic depression. You've got more resources. You're younger, you know, you're more vigorous.
Well, you have your health. I have some severe health problems. That's what really holds me back.
You know, but on the other hand, I'm sure you've got all kinds of other factors that are drawing you away from this. Isn't going to be your main priority this summer, you know.
Absolutely not.
You know, and so therefore, you know, is anything really going to happen in terms of, not Measure K, but in terms of what Measure K is meant to address? Police abuse around marijuana. That's the issue. I mean, if we really need a group, public, private, that's going to address that issue. And although we can make these colorful little protests and demonstrations every 6 months, it's not going to mean much unless we can create something independently. I notice, however, that you and Craig Canada have been talking about a public meeting.
Which will take place.
You've shown up, unlike almost any other. I think it took me a while to drag you into the studio when you were a Measure K. Maybe not. Maybe you came in immediately.
No, I've been coming in here since I'm on Medex.
You have been coming in here. You have been coming in here. But other members of the committee won't come in. They're afraid to do it, or, you know, I'm perhaps not the person they want to talk to. It's hard to say.
I love to talk. I love to come into the studio.
Well, Anita's, you do, and you talk well, Anita.
That's what the university does for you, isn't it?
We're in the studio with David Partita and Anita Henry. I'm Robert Norris. We have about 10 minutes left in the show. If you'd like to call in, you can. 427-3772 is the call-in line, and it is open, so you can call. These are both members of the Measure K committee, passed by the voters, but essentially castrated by the city council. And I mean, as a whole process, if you want to read about it, you can go on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz and look for... Google for Norse. Search for Norse. That's my name. I've written a number of stories about this, and I think I'm the only one, really. Until recently, Craig is now beginning to write about it more, and thanks, Craig, for doing that. Craig Canada, who has his own website, palmspringsbum.org, I believe it is.
No, it's not. I tried to send him an email.
Maybe it's www.
I don't know. And then I called him and left him a message, and the website and the email address
are two different things. But
okay. But if you're listening, Craig, either give me a call or send me an email, because I want to talk to you and meet up with you again, and I had a great time with you the other afternoon.
I've got a few things I want to do before the show ends, but I want to give you two the last word on this segment. David, Anita, anything you guys want to say?
No, I've done a lot of talking. I think we should just let David talk, whatever he wants. Yeah, whatever you want to say.
Just the one thing that I did notice at that meeting, and I think this is the most important thing, is that if anything's going to happen in that commission, it's not going to happen with all the members. You know, we have to take it upon ourselves to do that job that, I think both of you already touched on it, to do that job that Metro K is supposed to, the purpose of Metro K. So, in the next 6 months, there needs to be a flyer posted around downtown, the Beach Flats, Ocean Street, and there needs to be more information about this committee existing and the purpose of the committee. So that's not going to happen in the next meeting. You know, the next meeting, we already have the agenda, and nothing can be added on it, you know. So
actually, it can. The agenda is not fixed until 72 hours, or actually, I think it's 4 or 5 days before the meeting, so you can add stuff.
But you need to remember, we don't get the agenda or the minutes until
your old buddy Mary Lou Kopecky.
Gecky,
sorry, Mary Lou. Is it Mary Jo or Mary Lou? Mary Lou. Yeah, I mean, she, you know, she's supposed to respond to members of the committee in their attempt to put things on the agenda. And you should call her and say, I want this on the agenda, I want that on the agenda. But it's kind of stupid because it's 6 months away anyway, so what the fuck?
I know.
And what you got to do is create your own agenda and your own subcommittee meeting. So we're doing it. This is the
something
new,
will happen this summer,
this is the People's
Robert.
Measure K committee. And you go, you know, create something if you can find enough public support. And
well,
that's always been a problem.
We need more diversity also. I mean, the problem is we've got too many middle-class white people sitting on that. And I don't like to say that. But it happens to be true, and they just come from different walks of life and have
you
different
know, it's interesting.
They don't care about people on the margins.
I wonder if there's been any study, because the major, I guess the largest subgroup in the county or even the city is the Spanish-speaking group of people. And I wonder if there's been any study of marijuana arrests in that subgroup. I don't know. I mean, that might be something for people to investigate. The police.
Well, that's at the meeting. The I said I'm not asking by ethnicity. I mean, I don't want to.
But
make
I'd be curious. I'd
nervous.
Be curious because I mean that's something the police are very sensitive about.
Oh, I know.
I mean, if Tony Madrigal even hints, and I have got no brief for Madrigal's pussyish behavior around police review. He was bad on the police review board. I watched him for years.
But you know what?
He's had to tread lightly,
and he has come
along.
No,
he doesn't.
He has come a long way.
He was an errand boy. He was an errand boy for Tim Fitzmaurice back in 2001 in the Dolphin Lee case. He was a Citizens Police Review Board weenie. And what has he done? He's voted for every non or anti-union thing to come along on the city council. When he gets attacked,
which is very surprising because he was so involved with the SEIU.
Well, yeah. And ask SEIU members how well he protected them. That's another story. I mean, the problem with Tony is he's a nice guy. I like Tony as a person. He calls me back. He called me back today when I asked.
He responds to me
when
also.
When I asked
I
for
like
your number.
Him.
Thank you, Tony, for doing that. But, you know, it's not going to. My opinion of your activities is not going to change until you fucking do something. I mean, for a whole year he's dicked around with this community dialogue about racial racism and police abuse. And it's led nowhere. And I told him the first time, you know, is this the re-election campaign for Tony Madrigal and Simba Kenyatta? That's what I wanted to know. I wanted to know, you know, because we need to have activism.
And you mentioned them both in the same sentence because
they were the chair, they were the two lead figures in this community dialogue against racism, poverty. It was a long name that held a number of, I think, significant community meetings, but then did nothing about it. That's the problem. I mean, it seemed like a PR gesture. And so we have to find new people. Perhaps the people who are in this room or some old people who are just, you know, cranky and never give up. And new people who have an interest and who kind of see things pretty clearly. I mean, it didn't take you several meetings to decide, oh, well, I'm a new member here. I better kind of go along with.
Maybe you decided I'll go along with the
firebrand Henry.
You were the only one that didn't approve the semiannual report.
I mean, even she weenied out, you know.
Not approve it. Only you did. I abstained, so people...
Yeah, why are you such a troublemaker here, Partita? What is your problem? Why can't you go along with the group?
Grew up in the wrong side of town, that's what happened.
I guess so. Wrong side of the tracks, man.
Well, we are...
Playing the race card again, eh?
On there.
Nah, you put it out for
you. Well, yeah.
Because you know what? I really believe they're going to listen to David if and when he has something to say. And I don't want to play on ethnic or ethnicity. And a lot of it will have to do because you're Hispanic and because of your accent. They're going to listen to you. Because they're going to
they'll give you a token status, and then I don't mean
they'll act, but they'll listen when you talk.
Well, they'll listen unless you start suggesting that the Halloween triple fine zone should not be appropriate, and then you'll find every member of the council denouncing you for suggesting there might even be a possibility
of racial profiling. You have to have one or two issues that you follow. See, Robert's got his fingers in everything. He wishes.
Well, almost. Anyway, we have about 3 minutes left in the show. Anita and I are going to talk about this privately later. And I want to thank everybody for all your many phone calls. Actually, I will be back, and in case you do want to get in touch on a longer show, 9:30 on Sunday morning is the next edition of this show. More important, however, 1 o'clock in front of Bunny's Shoes, you can express your concern that you really want to buy those $100 shoes at Bunny's, but you can't do it if they're going to be a bunch of bigots toward the homeless. And therefore, encourage them to put a little thing in their window that says, we do not discriminate, and we favor the right to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere, you know, for homeless people. It's not such a big deal, but, you know, it really says, it says a lot to those who don't want to do it. And we'll see what goes on with that at 1 o'clock Saturday in front of Bunny's Shoes. You can also reach me between times at 423-4833. That's the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And you can also get a hold of Measure K committee members, Anita and David, at their respective numbers. Are you giving out your numbers? What's your feeling?
I can be reached at 425-3444. Just leave your name and leave your number, and I'll be happy to get back to you.
And what about you, David? You got a number you want to give out or not?
Email. I can do dpartida@ucse.edu.
dpartida@ucse.edu. I'll have to write that down.
I don't have
thanks.
A plan
that's
either.
It for Bathroom Spears Broadsides. The infamous Uncle Dennis has arrived with music in hand. He'll be explaining all the problems that Free Radio Santa Cruz is experiencing, why it's breaking up, and what you can do to stop the dissolution of this fine collective. Thanks for being with me.
I don't have any information about any of that.
Or he will refuse to say anything about it on the advice of his attorney. Thanks for being with me in this edition, and I will be with you again next time, hopefully, unless I'm not.
When you see this sign, it's time to go. This sign, you'll know it's time to go when the siren starts to blow. Remember the civil defense sign. This sign won't save you and me. This sign, but it's a hope for the souls of your friends and mine. Remember the civil defense sign. My town's got more signs than yours. More signs, I've got more band-aids, more ice cubes, and more iodine, just in case it hurts some friend of mine. This sign, you'll know it's time to go when the siren starts to blow. Remember the civil defense sign. I won't be the one to die, to die, to die. Of course, a certain percentage just has to go, but I won't be the one to die. Make the missile so Daddy will have a job. A job. A job. Missiles start to fly, we can all lay down and die. Then Daddy won't have to work anymore. When you see this sign, it's time to go. This sign, you'll know it's time to go when the siren starts to blow. Remember the civil defense sign. Remember the civil defense sign.
Let's see here. I'm in the process of clearing the studio.
Don't take it personally.
And I am Uncle Dennis. Robert and his guests will be exiting the studio.
No, no, we won't go.
Robert never has problems getting guests.
Okay, I'm out of here. Anyway, you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also at www.freakradio.org, somewhere out on the wide, weird web. We are a pirate station. We've been on the air for the past 14 years. We intend to be on the air as long as we possibly can. And you are tuned into a show called From the Cream to the Dregs, and we play music from the 60s and the 70s. Stay tuned for that. We also have the Brew of the Week coming up, a new and unique brew. And, of course, 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, 10 o'clock, the Spotlight Group of the Week. Uncle Dennis has some fresh vinyl. It's only 30 years old, but it's fresh to me. So stay tuned for all of that. You can hear more of Robert Norris if you care to. Sunday morning starting at 9:30, maybe earlier if he preempts the show of other programmers, which he's been known to do. History, Robert. History. All the truth, all the time. Anyway, all I can say is we're a collective, which doesn't mean we always get along.
Thank you.
make the voice a little lower and the band a little louder, okay? Make... Oh, where are you going with the...